This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. On this Fat Tuesday, we're going to hear some Mardi Gras memories from the great New Orleans songwriter, pianist, producer, and singer Alan Toussaint. Our first guest, Jean Demestre, was one of the founders of the famous New Orleans club, Tipitina's, named after a song by the legendary New Orleans pianist Professor Longhair, who was Toussaint's mentor. Now Demestre's work leaves little time for nightlife. For over 15 years, she's been working as a nurse practitioner. Her patients are poor women with HIV. The clinic in which she practices is part of New Orleans Charity Hospital, a hospital for the poor, which was flooded during Katrina. In an interview we recorded yesterday, she talked about her life in New Orleans and how it's been changed by Katrina. Jean, welcome to Fresh Air. What does Mardi Gras mean to you this year?
It means being normal. It means something that's a constant that can be there again to make us feel like we're whole.
Now, you were the co-founder of a club that became a really important part of New Orleans music scene, and that's Tipitina's. Is Tipitina's open again?
Yes, Tipitina's is open. The people who run Tipitina's right now have the Tipitina's Foundation, and they are wonderful, wonderful people, have done, ever since the storm hit, have been doing a tremendous amount of work, raising money to get musicians homes, to get them instruments, to get them back, and they have a lot of great music there. I was there the night that they opened up with the Rebirth Brass Band, and it was an incredible night. It was, I think, in October when they finally opened up, but they have... They now set up a kitchen there so that musicians can come get fed. They have kind of a service center for musicians so that they, if they need medical care, they know they can find out where to get it, helping them get housing, and then also borrowing some instruments or amplifiers and things like that if they need it for gigs.
And Tipitina's got its name from a Professor Longhair song?
Right, called Tipitina.
And he played there a lot, I take it.
Yes, until he died.
What was Tipitina's like when you and your friends first created it, before it became a famous New Orleans club?
It was a very funky place. The air conditioning rarely worked. It was very hot and soupy in there a lot, which to me went with the great music that was there. Smoky, dark, a lot of roaches.
how did you deal with those?
Oh, well, sometimes they crawled on the keyboards when people were playing. I remember one time Tracy Nelson had come to play, and a roach started crawling on the keyboard, and, you know, she laughed.
Oh, not everybody would have laughed.
No. Yeah.
You know, they always say roaches are going to be the ones that survive, like, an atomic war if there ever is one.
Uh-huh.
How did the roaches hold up after the hurricane? They're still around?
Yeah, they're still around. I haven't seen a lot of the big ones. I've seen a lot of little bitty ones, but they're still there. We're starting to see a lot more birds, too, again. And right after the storm, it was very still, and you didn't see a lot of mosquitoes, birds, anything, and now... You know, we're starting to see a lot of the birds come back, and trees are starting to come back. And we still have a couple of dead trees in our backyard that, not that fell over, but we keep waiting for them, signs of life, because I don't want to chop them down. I love my sweet olive tree. I don't want to admit it's dead yet.
Well, your life really changed a lot. You know, you had been one of the people who created Tipitina's. But now your work isn't the nightlife. It's not the celebratory part of New Orleans. You're working with people who are very sick. You're
Yes.
working with people who have HIV/AIDS and who are poor. Your clinic is attached to Charity Hospital, which is a hospital for the poor in New Orleans. What kind of condition is your clinic in now?
Well, currently our clinic is not open. It's part of a four-story building a few blocks away from the main Charity Hospital. And we were housed on the third and fourth floor of the building. The first floor got maybe 3 feet of water, which knocked out the elevator. Some looting took place in our pharmacy, and there was mold, and they have to remediate the mold and fix the elevators. We will be moving back into our building probably in less than a month, and we'll probably also be sharing our clinic now with some other charity clinics who don't have a space to be in. Because our population now, our patient population is probably going to be maybe 50% of what it was before, we have room and we'll share our space with some other charity clinics.
Are you seeing a lot of the patients who you saw before the hurricane?
We're seeing a few. I took care of just strictly women, and a lot of the women have not really come back. We're also seeing some new diagnoses who are coming into the clinic as well.
How soon after the hurricane did you resume your responsibilities as a nurse?
Immediately. I evacuated to a little place in central Louisiana called Center Point. A dear friend of mine had this huge farm, and they knew that my husband and I had a bunch of dogs and invited us to come up there. So we evacuated there. And it was about 2 hours from Baton Rouge, and I saw that they had set up a hospital and a triage area in Baton Rouge, and I couldn't sit and watch it on television. So, and they needed healthcare professionals. So I went to the Pete Maravich Center and did triage one night, and then in the field house there was a 300-bed hospital that they had set up, and so I worked a couple of days there until we started working in the clinic in Baton Rouge.
After the hurricane, you had really important work to throw yourself into because you resumed your duties as a nurse mm-hmm. practitioner working with people who have HIV/AIDS. In some ways, I could see how that would make it more difficult for you to carry on because you had a life to get back on track, and you know. Doing work, no matter how important that work, takes you away from getting your own life back in order. At the same time, I could see how having this kind of work would really help you because it would just kind of focus you on important work that got you out of your own troubles.
Yes, it did, and it was good to be able to focus on that. And it's kind of has been an anchor. In my life, I've done this for 15 years now, and the patients are like our family, my family at least. I've cared for some of them for many years, and so it was also reconnecting with them and making sure they were okay as well. It was challenging and difficult to be able to have to work and sometimes drive to Baton Rouge while living in New Orleans and trying to work on our house and get things back together and go through what I call the litany of the calls every day. I had a list of calls to make every day to check on electrical and supplies that we needed for our house. When was the gas? You know, we'd be chasing gas people down the street and electrical people, trucks down the street to say, what about our house? I missed my work. It was very frustrating not being able to work the few days that I didn't work, and so it was like an anchor for me to be able to work.
It sounds like a lot of your patients felt like family to you, but you know a lot of your patients never came back. They evacuated and they weren't able to go back home. So, are there a lot of patients who you've lost track of, and do you feel like you've lost track of people who are really important to you?
Yes, I often wonder about patients that I'll be looking on the computer to check labs on somebody, and another person's name will come back, and I'll go, wow, I wonder what happened to them. I've seen in the death notices one of my patients who shouldn't have died, and I don't know what happened to her. It was well after the storm where I saw that she had died. There was a notice in the paper, and I haven't been able to get in touch with people to, you know, her family to find out what happened to her. We got a call from the morgue in St. Gabriel, Louisiana, just a couple of days ago to try and get dental records on one of the female patients who they were trying to identify. And we don't know what happened to her. So it does nag you to wonder where they all are. And I'm so grateful for those who had my number and called me and told me where they were, or also because of providers getting in touch with me, you know, saying, we have this patient here, can you get us some records? And to know that they were in good hands somewhere. I think that the other thing that's scary and about a lot of these patients, too, is that some of them had not disclosed to even their family members that they had HIV. So they may be afraid to seek care because they kind of had something set up in New Orleans, and they could hide it from whoever they wanted to hide it from and take care of themselves. But now they're in a strange place needing to reestablish care somewhere, and they don't want to disclose their status to people because of the stigmatization that's still around about HIV. One of the things that really amazed me about when I was triaging in Baton Rouge was that I kept walking around to other HIV providers who were volunteering there and saying, have you seen any HIV patients? And nobody said they had HIV. And I don't know whether because for some strange reason nobody was there, or whether it was because they were afraid to say they had HIV because they were afraid that they would, you know, be ostracized or have problems because of admitting that they had it.
Well, I could see how that would be a particular problem if you're living in somebody else's home and they don't know that you're sick. They might have, you could easily fear that they'd have second thoughts about taking you in.
Right, right.
Your home is in the neighborhood of Broadmoor. How was that neighborhood affected by the hurricane?
It was hit pretty hard. There was, in our particular block, there was 8 feet of water. And so it's pretty devastated. A lot of the houses in the neighborhood are raised houses already. They were built that way to sustain flood water. But unfortunately, a lot of people had built apartments or had living space in the part that they shouldn't have living space. And so people lost things there. But most people, their main living space is above what the floodwaters were.
And what about you?
Well, we had actually, prior to this event, had flooded numerous times and were part of a FEMA project that offered a grant to raise our house above the flood level, the floodplain level. And we had applied for this grant in 1999 and moved out of our house in 2003. And through a series of unfortunate events, it took a lot longer than it was supposed to take to raise our house. We were about 3 weeks away from moving back into our home. We had been living in a small basement apartment across the street. So we lost all of our possessions that were across the street, we really didn't sustain a lot of damage in our home because we'd raised it actually higher than what FEMA had recommended. We raised it 3 feet higher. So we got no water in the main living space of our house other than what came through the holes in our roof. So we're back home.
So you're in your newly raised home?
Yes.
And can you stay there?
Well, we're not sure. The ULI, the Urban Land Institute report that just came out as part of the Bring New Orleans Back report, actually has part of Broadmoor to be rebuilt. Part of it looks like there's a big green space over where our house actually is that's slated to be a park. It's sort of a drainage park, or it's going to be a park, but it's really going to be for drainage too. And the Neighborhood Association of Broadmoor has banded together, has meetings weekly, and is working very hard in a very methodical manner to prove that our neighborhood is viable. A lot of people are back already, but they're great dark areas still. If you drive around at night, there are a lot of houses that are still abandoned. Every week I see more FEMA trailers. And we hope that we can prevent this neighborhood, this wonderful old neighborhood, from being turned into a park, partially turned into a park.
What would it take to do that?
Well, we're responding to the report. The Neighborhood Association is responding to every piece of the report in saying what we have and what we would like to do with the neighborhood. I haven't been able to be as involved with this as I want to, because, and I don't know how many people can do this, because it's, you know, you're rebuilding your house, you're trying to get your house straight and moved in, you're working, you're trying to cling on to your job, and then you have to defend your neighborhood.
My understanding is that, like, a certain percentage of residents in a neighborhood that was hard hit by the flood and might be hit again if there were another flood, that a certain percentage of the people have to, like, move back and be committed to staying there in order for the neighborhood to be included in the new plan. Is that right?
That's what I understand. About 50% have to be back. And our neighborhood association has this huge map, and they have block captains, and people are reporting back whether they're moving back, whether they're going to sell their house, or whether they're not coming back. And every time I go to a meeting, there's more color on the map. Most of it is closest to the large street that goes through Broadmoor, which is Napoleon Avenue. And so a lot of the population is clustered around Napoleon Avenue right now. But I think seeing a FEMA trailer is a sign that people are coming back, and I'm seeing FEMA trailers further out, too.
If your neighborhood ended up not being included in the plan for the New Orleans, what would happen to your newly raised home?
I don't know. We were hoping we could be the park supervisors. but I don't know. It would be a terrible tragedy. I don't know if we could afford a new home in New Orleans. The prices are in the good, the neighborhoods that weren't hit are going up. And if they say that they would only give you the pre-Katrina value of your home, well, our house was under renovation, so I don't even know what the value of my home was before the storm.
Do you have services in your neighborhood now? Electricity, water, gas?
We just got gas about 2 weeks ago. We got full power electricity. We were on a temporary pole until last week, and we got full power of our electricity. We don't have a landline. We don't have cable TV. We don't have internet. And so my sister had ordered a FEMA trailer and asked if she could put it on our property. So we let her do that. And then we ended up using it a lot to bathe in and cook in, because we didn't have gas to have a stove.
Would you describe your neighborhood for us? And, you know, like, who lives there, what the neighborhood's known for?
It's a very mixed neighborhood. I was just reading some statistics that were in the newspaper recently that it's 60-some-odd percent African-American and about 40% white. You see the gamut from very, very poor to very, very rich in our neighborhood. One of the things that our neighborhood's known for is that it's the home of Moon Landrieu, well, current home of Moon Landrieu and Senator Mary Landrieu's parents, Moon and Verna. Verna Landrieu grew up in actually the house that we live in. And it's just known to be a very homogenous, mixed neighborhood.
Could you see yourself moving to another city?
Never.
Well, what would you do? Say your neighborhood is not part of the plan, is not included in the New Orleans. In other words, the city would not be supplying services to it. If that happened, what would you do? Where would you go?
Well, my mother and my sister both live in a part of the city that's an older part of the city and near the Garden District, and I would probably move in with my mother.
Your husband and you would move in with your mother?
And our four dogs.
Change her life,
Mom.
A little bit.
yeah, it would change her life a lot, but I don't know. She hasn't given me permission to do that yet, but it's probably what we would have to do. I don't know how this would happen. Would they kick us out, you know? Would we have 2 years to move out? I mean, we have services now, so I don't know how it would happen, but we'd have to think long and hard, which I don't want to do right now because I don't want to even, I don't want that to be an option. I want to stay where we are. I love our house. I love our neighborhood.
Well, Jean Demestre, thank you very much for talking with us and, you know, good luck.
Thank you.
Jean Demestre spoke to us from New Orleans. Our interview was recorded yesterday.